It's number 2014-22, and ask you all to stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Troll?
Here.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Present.
Mayor Sanford?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you. We'll move right on into a special order of business, and we have really had three things already this evening. I stopped over and welcomed all the people from Douglas into their station and their new fire truck in Douglas. Some of the gentlemen and gentlewomen you see out here are here from that ceremony. And we're also here to recognize a couple of firefighters. And these old dog firefighters happened to start when I was some of their fire chiefs out there at Glacier Station way back when. So it'll be interesting to hear comments. And do we want the chief to come up?
Yes, please.
Chief Etheridge. Let's do Mr. Armory first, okay? Mark, will you come up with your wife, Jesse?
Well, I want to introduce Firefighter Mark Barnsby and his wife, Jesse. It's my pleasure to recognize both Mark Bormsby and Lynn Vidal tonight, because when I was a new volunteer just starting out at Glacier Station, these were the old-time career firefighters that I looked up to. These guys were who I was striving for when I was a young firefighter just starting and learning what I was doing. So these guys set an outstanding example to follow. Firefighter Mark Bormsby was a live-in firefighter prior to getting hired full-time in April of 93 by Chief Larry Fanning. He's one of the few remaining active graduates of the JATS, the Juno Area-Wide Training Program, to achieve your Firefighter 1 certification. He received that from, at that time, Area-Wide Training Coordinator Galen Brevick. Mark became an active member of the Swiftwater team in the early 90s. With his retirement, he's one of the last of the five original members of the Medic 1 program. The Medic 1 program was a cutting-edge medical care system that started in Juno, based out of Washington. Really saved a lot of lives, not only in our community, but in the outlying communities, as Mark was one of the lead members in our medevac program. I couldn't even guess how many flights that he flew and all kinds of weather. Countless amounts of property and lives have been saved directly because of Mark and his involvement in the fire department. Fortunately for us, he's not going away completely. He's agreed to stick on with us as a volunteer firefighter for a while, so hopefully we can keep him for quite a long time there. In his retirement, he will visit him quite frequently at his new barbecue trailer, Fat Moe's, out there in the valley. I just want to say thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jesse, for allowing us to have Mark for so long. And congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
So, Mark is one of the dependable guys, one of the dependable people from the old days of firefighting in the Juneau system. And you could always depend on Chief Max Melke is here as a volunteer chief. And Mark is one of those paid guys that was always there to help volunteers learn their trade and be safe in their trade. So, Mark, I truly appreciate what you did for what you have done for our community, and it sounds like what you're going to continue to do. So thank you very much, and congratulations.
Yeah, help. I'll call you chief.
Thanks. Yeah, you can do that. And if you want to say anything, you can. If you don't, what I want you to do is start over there and shake hands, and we'll do the line.
Thank you.
That's dangerous. It's been a pleasure to serve this community. I've made a lot of good friends, met a lot of good people. And Juneau is now my home. It's been my home since 1987. I met my wife, Jessie Lewis, here in 2004. And I couldn't be here without these guys in blue over here, the past and the present. And it was, I guess, fun to work with JPD, work with them. But other than that, I did have a speech I was going to read. It's about the length of War and Peace, but I decided that I want a retirement check first. Yeah. Thank you anyway.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mary.
Hi, Mark. I'm sorry I'm not there to say congratulations to you, but thank you for your service and good luck in whatever else you do next.
Well, thank you, Mary. And I want to thank you for renting your fourplex to me when I needed a room.
You're welcome. We'll always take your money, Mark.
Yeah, I'd like to just say something that Mark was one of the key players when I was mauled by a bear. That helped save my life, man.
All right. You're welcome. I had a bad joke for you, though.
You did?
Weird thought that when Max is at the hospital on the third floor, I thought of seriously taking a 35-foot ladder up to his window with a stuffed bear.
Mark, start over here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome,
Randy. Hey, we appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
A great
start.
Thank you. Thank you for continuing to volunteer.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure, Mark. Thank you for sharing it.
Keep cooking.
I always remember you got sprayed with the
That was not nice, was it?
Thanks for sharing, Justin.
Don't feel free to kick him out of the house and he's hanging around.
The next person we'd like to recognize is Lynn Rydell. If you'd like to come up and bring your family with you,
bring them all if they want to come, Lynn. Come on, son and grandkids. Come on up and stand next to Grandpa.
Okay, this is Captain Lynn Rydell. He's been with the fire department formally for 24 years. Retiring at the end of this month, so this is the last assembly meeting we can get him to before he takes off. So his final shift is August 31st. Captain Lynn Rydell worked under Lieutenant Merrill Sanford in his early years. His first evaluation I could find in the files notes that Lynn's a hard worker, go-getter, and he's going to be a real asset to the department. His lieutenant saw something in him early on because, man, you can't get much more of a solid person than Captain Rydell. He's got the history of the department. He knows everybody in town. He needs something done. He finds a common sense, practical way to do it. So it's been a real honor to work with him. One of my first memories of working with then firefighter Rydell was sitting in the back of an ambulance at a police standoff while he's madly cramming for his EMT recertifications. He's also known in the department as the most interesting man in the world. He can regale you for hours with the stories of his life and experiences in the fire department. He was also one of the first fire officers to lead an attack team inside the Gastineau apartments with 2.5-inch hose all the way to the fire floor before his crew got beaten back into the stairwells because of the heat and smoke. During that entire night, clean up, dealing with all the calls coming in afterwards, he maintained a positive attitude, and he's a shining example of what a firefighter should be. He also has agreed to stick around with us. He's going to help coordinate our volunteer driver training program and help train and educate the new drivers joining our department. We hope to see him around for many years because we have lots of new firefighters that need his influence. And both of these men have survived and served their communities well. I want to thank them both for their service to the community. I'd like to thank Lynn for his service and his friendship over the years. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure being a firefighter for, well, almost 30 years. I was in the volunteers for 6, 24 in the paid department. Don't plan on going anywhere. like Chief said, I'll be in the volunteers, and you haven't seen the last of me yet.
Back behind you. You guys can step back here if you want. So this is your wife and your mother?
No, my significant other and my mother.
My grandson. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Hi, welcome. Well, it just gives me a great deal, a great pleasure to say thank you to Lynn and Mark. But Lynn started as a volunteer with us out at Glacier Fire Station and helped us through many, many drills and training of our volunteers. Back then, we had three people per shift. And we went on to have six people per shift. And Lynn was a volunteer who went back and forth between the paid guys and the volunteers readily and helped on both sides of the house. And I truly appreciate that with any person or any paid guy or any volunteer person who can go back and forth with the two different parts of our important parts of our community and our firefighting and EMT crews. That's important to do, and Lynn has always been there to help us out and keep us going. So Lynn, thank you very much, and here's your, it's got 23 years. I don't know what you are now. It's been a long time since you've been in the firefighting. So I just want to say thank you to you, and happy trails. I know that you'll take good care of our new drivers and that.
Merrill saw me through the door the first night, and he's seeing me out the door tonight.
And I'll be there for your last lunch. You want to start over there and shake people's hands coming this way? You want to go with Grandpa and shake hands?
Thank you for your service. I see you've got a recruit behind you here.
Hi.
Thank you. Happy retirement. Hi.
I'm not all the way done yet.
And thanks for being a volunteer. That's awesome. Very fun.
Thank you, Lynn. It's been a
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mayor, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Lynn. I'm again sorry that I'm also not there to shake your hand. Thank you for your service and to the family, thank you for sharing him with our community. Best of luck in your next endeavor.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Anybody else want to say anything? Okay. Thanks, you guys. Appreciate it. If you want to leave, you can go ahead. Okay, we'll move on to approval of minutes. We have the July 10th, 2014 Special Assembly Meeting 2014-19. Is there any corrections to the minutes? Approved as documented. July 17th, 2014 Special Assembly Meeting 2014-20 minutes. Are there any corrections to those minutes? So ordered as documented. July 21, 2014, regular assembly meeting 2014-21 minutes. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Madam.
I was sure that someone would say this, so I just didn't. But on page 10 of those minutes, Juno is creatively spelled in the 1, 2, 3, 4th. This paragraph, where it starts with Mr. Keel said.
Go ahead and shut that door for me, please.
Mary, could you repeat which set of minutes you were referring to?
It's for the 21, I think that's the one we're on, right? For the 21st, page 10, it's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th paragraph. It's right after Mr. Nankervis said he was in support, and then it starts with Mr. Keel said. The second to the last line, the word Juno is misspelled.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
There was another part of the minutes that had a wrong vote. It was 6-2, and it should have been 7-2. And I can't remember where it is in the minutes, but...
I'll find them.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there any other corrections to the July 21st minutes? Approved as read, then, and as amended. Manager's request for agenda changes.
None, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any changes? Is there any agenda changes for the assembly? Seeing none, we'll move forward to public participation on non-agenda items. There was nobody signed up for this segment. I'll just ask the public if anybody wishes to speak to us on a non-agenda item tonight. Yes, sir.
Are you referring to the new rule for 30-day calls?
No. Okay. That'll be in the ordinance for the secondhand dealers. Okay. So you'll have a chance to have a public hearing there if that's what you wish. Okay. You all cleared up there, Mr. Roundtree?
I can't hear you.
Okay. Do you understand where we're at, or do you have a question for us?
No, go ahead.
Okay. We'll move forward to the consent agenda. And is there anybody from the public who wishes to pull an item from the consent agenda other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing none, assembly requests for consent agenda changes. There anything from the assembly? Assembly action, please. Mr. Wanamaker?
I move approval of the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you. Are there any objections? The consent agenda has been approved. We'll move forward to public hearing, and the first item on public hearing is Ordinance 2014-08C. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending Title 20 of the City and Borough Code to provide for the regulation of secondhand dealers of certain property and providing for a penalty.
Thank you. Admin report, please.
This ordinance was introduced at the June 9, 2014 Assembly meeting and referred to the June 30th Assembly Human Resources Committee meeting and set for public hearing on July 21st. The HRC at its June 30th meeting reviewed the ordinance and asked to continue it to a future HRC meeting for additional work. The HRC took public testimony at its July 17th meeting and discussed the ordinance. Version B of the ordinance was distributed at this meeting. At the July 21st Assembly meeting, HRC Chair Jesse Keel moved to continue the public hearing to August 11th Assembly meeting, which is tonight's, to allow for the committee to continue to review it at a special HRC meeting on July 31st. At that meeting, the HRC moved version C of the secondhand store ordinance to the Assembly. The changes between version A, B, and C are narrowed scope of the regulation to seven categories of items: precious metals, precious gems, firearms, coins, bullion, and electronic equipment and tools valued over $50. All required actions under the ordinance are related solely to those items. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager, and I will open up Ordinance 2014-08C to public comment. I have one person signed up. Do we have anybody else who wishes to comment on this? Okay, we have two more, three more. Okay. So, Mr. Dylan Hammond, if you want to come up first.
Can I go last?
If you wish, I don't care.
Can I ask a question?
Come up here so we can get you on record and hear you. So sit up here.
Okay.
Thank you. And give me your name first, please.
Oh, sure. Frank Mastag.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, actually, I had a question to start with. I mean, the purpose of the ordinance was to facilitate, I'm assuming, identifying stolen goods, correct? How would this ordinance, in effect, facilitate that specifically, other than current laws that are in effect?
Other than what?
Than current laws that are in effect or remedies that deal with stolen items.
Okay, Madam Manager, do you want to tackle that, or the law department tackle it, or who?
I will start, and then the city attorney can fill in. Right now, there is ordinances in place for pawn shops, but there's nothing in place for secondhand dealers. So if somebody was to bring in something, there was no way for that item to be held so that somebody could come look at it and identify it, and the police could then go forward to try and recover that stolen goods. And so that was the intent of bringing this ordinance forward, is to have a system in place for a limited number of items that would record what those items were, who brought it in, so that there could be some trace, a system in place to be able to track back where they came from to begin with, and then allow police to do their work.
I see. So would it be fair to say then that under the ordinance that would give the police department time to identify stolen goods in some form or another, once identified, then try to relate that or tie that into a particular person selling those goods or trading them in? Would that be a fair assessment? Or?
Yes, it would give them an opportunity to look at it and then at least have people to be able to talk to.
Wouldn't it be possible that if there was a system in place that you could identify the perpetrator, not only with respect to the item traded in, but the time that it occurred, and even a picture of the perpetrator, that would satisfy that same requirement? Isn't the objective then to identify the person trading in a stolen good? Wouldn't that be one and the same? Good question.
I don't think it would be one and the same.
In what respect?
Because many times we don't have that information available to us.
Okay, for example, I represent the new gun range, and in that we have security cameras, so that if we have a person that comes in and trades a gun in, then it's recorded on the security camera. And so not only do you identify the person, but we have to record that in an ATF-required manual for both rifles and pistols. And the only thing that we would be lacking in that particular document, which could be adjusted or amended, would be the time that it actually occurred, so that under our security camera system, we can identify not only who traded it in, we'd have a picture of them, and we have a log of the particular item as well as the serial number. So in a sense, then, we're providing prima facie evidence with respect to the person that brought the item in. Now, I don't know how that relates to pawn shops, because I'm not familiar with pawn shops, but I know that for our particular entity that is exactly how it occurs. And to provide a time that the event occurred would allow us to identify by way of the security cameras, because they're constantly on, and would identify the person bringing in the item, who it was. Seems to me, unless I'm mistaken, if the city attorney disagrees, that would provide prima facie evidence as to who the perpetrator was.
Law department?
I think one purpose is also to give the rightful owner of the good the opportunity to, it's not just trying to track down the perpetrator, but to identify the object. And if the 30-day period gives someone, for instance, who's on vacation, comes back, discovers something stolen, to be able to go to look for it as opposed to the quick disposal of items that are gone forever and are never found. And so that's...
Okay, fair enough. But in reality, though, if we take an item in on trade, we would record the serial number, the make and model. We identify the person that brought it in by using ID. And at the same time, we have a visual image with our security system, so that for all practical purposes, we have provided, I would assume, enough information for the police department to do an arrest, or at least, at the very least, an investigation based on the information we have. How would that differ then from what the particular objective of this ordinance is. See, the problem that we run into is that in a particular business, you have carrying costs. So let's say that we carry a number of rifles, shotguns, pistols, et cetera, and to that extent, we've purchased those, and those are a carrying cost. And so one of the ways of doing business is to take items in on trade against those particular items, okay? So we, in effect, then delay our profit as such and incur additional carrying charges by having that object available for perusal. Now, the problem I see, and I don't have a good answer for, is that number one, I know that with the clients we get, not everybody pulls their pistols out or looks for their pistols, rifles, whatever, at any particular time. We have people that are routine shooters, for example, but the majority of people, they come in and they periodically shoot, and at that point in time, they discover it's missing, let's say, okay? So to set a 30-day time limit in itself doesn't really solve the problem from my perspective, because that's assuming that everybody within 30 days is going to find their item missing, and that's not the case.
Mr. Mayor, I would appreciate testimony to the Assembly as opposed to an inquisition of the staff.
Thank you, Mr. Troll. And Mr. Keel, will you bring forward your perspective on all this first? Oh, go ahead.
Well, sure, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. I very much appreciate Mr. Mezdag's comments, and there were some comments along similar lines during the Human Resources Committee hearing on this matter. I mean, certainly there's no magic in 30 days as opposed to 45 days or 15. It was a proposal JPD brought forward as what they felt was a reasonable amount of time for folks who, for instance, might be on vacation to come home and find all the drawers turned inside out and have an opportunity to recover property that was stolen from them. It didn't seem appropriate to lengthen that because of the carrying costs to businesses, and to shorten it, I think a number of folks thought was potentially really to risk the benefit that this ordinance brings in returning stolen goods to individuals. The other thing that the city manager didn't mention in terms of benefit of this ordinance is the electronic reporting. It makes improves law enforcement's ability to find stolen items that have been reported stolen, rather than having to dedicate an officer to a property crime to go out and look at every licensed firearms dealer, in this case firearms, in this example, in the city and borough of Juneau. They can look at the electronic reporting system and find out whether something matching the description comes in. You know, the crimes against people come first, and when we have limited police resources. And so this electronic reporting system really, JPD testified to us, affords them an opportunity to recover a lot more stolen property without adding a whole bunch of officers we don't currently have the ability to add. I shouldn't say a whole bunch of officers, without the increased costs of added officers. So speaking broadly, those were some of the issues that were discussed.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. So you have objection to the 30-day, Mr. Mezdag?
Well, correct, because I'm offering an alternative. I mean, 30 days is an arbitrary number. I mean, that's assuming that a person discovers, you know, with the exception of the person that discovers that his house has been rifled or broken into, may in theory then go and check and see if his guns have been stolen. I mean, totally reasonable. But what about the person who doesn't see that? You know, so 30 days then becomes a nebulous number. That's just a best guess. You know, sometime in 30 days we go out and check, and so we look under the bed, in the closet, in the safe or whatever, and we find out these guns are missing. So that's an arbitrary number. On the flip side, if you have a system in place, then that could certainly be a variation or an amendment to the ordinance or a change in the ordinance that requires that people dealing with trade-in items require a certain amount of them to provide and facilitate certain amounts of data that would make it easier for the police department to not only identify the stolen item, but at the same time have an electronic record of the transaction that took place. So, for example, if I have a customer come in and he trades in guns and we determine a value and such, we give him a trade-in value, and against that trade-in value, he purchased a new rifle. Well, during that course of that transaction, we would have to make very few changes that would accommodate the police department at the same time accommodate the store owner, you know, our business. For us to have additional carrying costs of 30 days may seem like a negligible amount. In reality, however, we have payroll twice a month. We have cost of replacing inventory. We have cost of placing, you know, covering overhead. And 30 days can make and does make a huge difference. So how do you remedy the problem and at the same time provide the police department with the information that they effectively need? So if the ordinance were such that any particular transaction requiring a trade-in or an item brought in with the perspective of trading it in or either selling it, then why not simply require that that item be recorded electronically and a time and date entered into the record, in which case, if we're approached by the police department and they ask us to research a particular serial number, and remember again that under ATF rules, we are required to record every transaction with respect to name, ID, serial number, et cetera. So we have all that data. That's something we routinely do. We get audited by the ATF, and in the event that we don't meet on that compliance, we're punished, fined, et cetera. So that information is already there. The only thing that we need in addition to that, then, is a requirement to report the time that the event occurred, which allows us then to access our security cameras, because that data is in constant, not only to record the data, but it's set aside. It's recorded. We have it accessible. What makes a difference, however, is that to access it efficiently, we just simply need a time at which it occurred, and then we can produce that picture of the person that was involved in that transaction. So not only do we have now the transaction that took place.
I have to ask you to stop here because we're eating into everybody else's
time.
Be able to give their testimony in that. So are there any questions for Mr. Misnick? Mr. Jones.
Are you aware that except for the 30-day hold, basically what this ordinance is requiring is already state law? It's already state law. What is being required in this ordinance, other than a 30-day hold, is already state law? You're already supposed to be in compliance with all of that?
Well, and we are in compliance. I mean, we record all the data so that where we approach, we would be able to provide that data.
Any other questions for Mr. Misday? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Misday.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Roundtree, do you wish to testify on this topic?
My name is Graham Roundtree, and I am the owner of George's Gift Shop. And I'd like to address this ordinance you're proposing tonight after a long merchant in the city of Juneau. First off, I think, is this ordinance defendable in court? That would be your first consideration. Another thing is, how is JPD going to determine ownership of any privately owned merchandise that's reported as stolen? That's their big criteria. Because if they come into my store with a search warrant, and are looking at an identical piece of merchandise that somebody says is stolen, where do we stand right there? I end up with a bad reputation, and a previous defendant is unhappy. Everything pretty much in the stores in the business trade of the visitors is a lot of it's bought through the front door. We have Native people walking the streets selling carvings, other stuff. How are you going to determine ownership of all of this merchandise? And you're putting JPD on the spot to make a determination of who owns this merchandise. How many people have registered the serial number of their firearm they have at home and can tell you they own it per that serial number? How many people know the license plate number of their car? If it's reported stolen, JPD can say it's a blue car. There's hundreds of blue cars. Somebody somewhere along the line is going to have to be knowledgeable and determine the right of ownership. And another thing, too, everything on this earth is previously owned. How are you going to determine previously owned or secondhand? What's the difference? You go buy a car, General Motors owned it, you're the second owner. It's secondhand.
So, Mr. Roundtree, just for your information, there is nothing about Native cultural art in this bill.
What?
There's nothing about Native cultural art or clothing or anything like that in this bill.
That's true, but down the road it could be bar talk. What's the difference? The ordinance would affiliate.
It doesn't right now, so just so
can
you know.
Can I take your word on that?
It's written in the law, in the ordinance that way.
And that, it makes me get a bill of sale for everything I buy, whether it's legal or illegal. And I can't determine that on the spot. And by the time it's reported as stolen, it puts me in a bad light. Because every store in Juneau does it. They buy off the street.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you object to in the ordinance?
Because I could come in your house and look over your goodies and go report, those are stolen. What are you going to do? You got a receipt they're sold?
No, I got a receipt that I bought them, though. Mm-hmm. But anyway, do you have any other things that you wish to speak to directly to this ordinance?
Well, I got a whole list here. But it used to be that JPD would circulate a list of stolen property, mm-hmm. which was very helpful, and it worked very well. And now it's discontinued, and we've lost track of it. So in years past, there was no problem. But now you're creating something that's going to become an elephant in a china shop.
Over the past 2 months, they have restricted the ordinance to seven items, seven things only.
I mean, what's the difference?
Okay. Well, it will make a difference. But
it's something that you're opening a can of worms. Okay. And is it defendable in court?
According to our law department, who has been working.
Pardon?
According to the law department, it is defendable in court.
Okay.
They've been right along with this whole process looking at it.
Yep. But you never know how a judge is going to rule.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, any questions for Mr. Roundtree? All right, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one more person in the back of the room who wishes to communicate with us, Mr. Cox.
I'm Ray Cox, the owner of Rayco Sales, a sporting goods store in the valley that mainly sells firearms, shooting-related materials, some camping gear, and miscellaneous things that we purchase when a person is cleaning out and they've got stuff they don't want. They box it up, bring it in. And many times, we'll just say, you got a ballpark figure what you want for it? He say, yeah, give me two boxes of ammo for my 30-30. I look at it, and the deal is done. Under this regulation, I'm going to have to take every item to the back of the store, sort every item in that box out, go through it, list it, number it, then secure it for 30 days. And by secure, I think you mean under lock and key. I have no place to put it under lock and key. I'm going to have to build a cabinet or a closet or a room. I don't know how big, and I don't know how much it'll cost. Plus, I'm going to sit on that merchandise for 30 days. That's 30 days of interest that I've got to pay for the money that I'm paying for that merchandise. I think the cost of the whole thing is just for the dealer is absurd. There's too much time involved to keep all these records with the present staff. I don't think we'd be able to do it. We would have to hire someone for the amount of stuff that comes in that needs to be recorded and sent to the police department, wait for 1 month, and then put it out for sale. As an aside to this, I was not notified by the city and borough about this ordinance. I found out through someone else. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here and wouldn't know anything about it. I'm not sure if any of the other people were notified or not, but I wasn't. I have a lot of suggestions that I think could have made this thing a lot simpler. For one thing, I'd like to see, if it does pass, that anybody that is caught stealing and found guilty pay the same penalty that we as dealers are going to have to pay, which is $500. Take that to the court system and see if the legal system will allow it and make them find the thieves that are stealing it, pay the same amount of money for stealing it that we have to pay if we mess up on our records, intentionally or accidentally.
Mr. Cox, is there anything specific?
At the end of the month, previously, the Juneau Police Department sent me a list of stolen firearms, and we found that very helpful because we would go through our entire book for that entire month and see if any of those firearms had been purchased during that period of time. Very few of them were. Like Mr. Roundtree says, many people who have a stolen firearm don't even know it's stolen until 5 or 6 months later. I had a case summer before last where a young stepson took his stepfather's firearms, two of them, brought them in, sold them. I knew the stepson. I had no suspicion whatsoever. I bought the guns. They were not high-priced guns, $200, $300 guns. One of his uncles happened to be in the store a couple days later, and I put two together and mentioned to him, said, oh, by the way, X brought in a couple of firearms to sell the other day. Do you know anything about it? He said, no, I don't. I don't see why he would be selling any of them. He called his stepson's stepfather, or his nephew's stepfather, and he went and looked in his gun safe. The guns were not there. He did not have a serial number on them. He didn't keep a serial number. He came by the store and looked at them and said, yes, these are my guns. He called the police department. They came and confiscated the guns. They were carried into court. The kid was found guilty of stealing the guns. I got a partial payment in restitution a year and a half ago. I have not received any more restitution on it. I haven't received a thank you from the stepfather or anything. These are some of the problems that we have to face in dealing with this. And I want to run a clean operation as best I can. If I had not said anything about it, one of the guns had already been sold. We had to go and get it from the guy that bought it, reimburse him, and then make that good.
Mr. Cox, if I could get the assembly to ask you if you have any questions for you.
I had one other thing here.
One more.
In our store, we offer each customer, when they purchase a firearm, a sheet of paper so they can list every firearm that they own with the serial number on it. I would say, and this is just a guess, you'd be lucky if 25% of the people, and I might ask for a show of hands in here, of how many of you people got a list of the firearms you own? Ha-ha. Five out of this crowd. Six. One up here. You see what I mean? And this is universal. We got to live with that. And if we buy a firearm that's stolen, and the guy doesn't even know the serial number of his firearm, how's he going to prove that's his firearm? I had a case last week.
Mr. Cox,
a person brought a gun in.
Stop, please. Is there anybody on the assembly who has any questions for Mr. Cox? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Dylan Hammond, change his light to 5 minutes, and I don't want anybody else over 5 minutes. This is supposed to be the last one.
Hi, my name is Dylan Hammond. First, I'd like to clear up some misinformation and misconceptions. I'll start with the misconceptions. I, Dylan Hammond, the Juneau Gold buyer, fully support what the police department and the assembly is doing and give my stamp of approval on ordinance 2014-08 with a few reservations. Second misconception, I do not melt gold at my shop. Now on to the misinformation. About 6 weeks ago, I heard a news announcement on the radio that there was a theft of 83 1-ounce gold Krugerrands. Not true. The truth is that there was a theft of a 1983 gold Coogan.
Mr. Hammond, could you stick to just the ordinance itself? Is there anything that you wish to see us change in the ordinance?
Now on to my reservations on the ordinance 2014-08. I would like to see raw gold and bullion exempt from this ordinance, mainly because the 30-day hold order makes it almost impossible to pay a fair price and provide a good service for these items due to market fluctuations. I currently pay 80 to 90% of the value of these items. I would also like to see that the 30-day hold order on electronics be reduced to 2 weeks due to the rapid depreciation of newer electronics. Other than that, I appreciate what the police department and the assembly is doing. It is important that people get adequate time to recover their items. Thank you.
Mr. Hammond, thank you very much. Is there any questions for Mr. Hammond? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else out there? Mr. Watson. Is there anybody else out there who wishes to speak to us on this ordinance? Okay, this is going to be the last call for this. So, Mr. Watson, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dennis Watson, for the record, 9333 Northland. I certainly hadn't come here tonight to offer any offer any opinions by myself, but I've been both a victim and a benefactor to, I've been a victim of A, B, D, and I believe the last category. And if it hadn't been for, in another community, hadn't been for some stringent regulations that they had in place, we would not have recovered some very valuable family heirlooms that were irreplaceable in our family's eyes, probably couldn't even financially calculate a cost. So from a victim side, I think this is a very important ordinance for the community. It may not be perfect. I don't think the borough has any ordinance that's perfect, none that I've ever seen. But without a start, we have nothing. As a businessman, on the other side of the coin, I've had to go and search out my lost and stolen, I'll call it lost, but stolen merchandise. And I had a very sophisticated computer system. In fact, JPD actually had the IT folks come out and look at it after they had to come out and follow up on an investigation for theft. And I was able to provide them with the information that they needed. But that's an expense that I incurred. I made that decision on my own. And if a business wants to do that, so be it. But without protection, this community needs more protection, I should say. Right now, we have little. And I appreciate the Assembly's efforts to put a halt to what is a growing problem in this community. And I also respect the other business people for the problems that they're dealing with. But there's got to be a give and take. And I think it's important that you all take some action tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Watson.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Watson? Seeing none, thank you. I will close public comment for now, and we will move forward to assembly action. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of ordinance serial number 2014-08C.
C, you said?
C, yes.
Okay, thank you. And you had something that you wanted to move forward as a...
I do, Mr. Mayor. The law department asked me to clarify something in the ordinance having to do with the violations. The change would appear on page 9, at line 16. There's only one thing, one piece of this ordinance that violating would be a misdemeanor. Everything else would just be a violation. So this section on page 9, line 16, says any of these rules you break is a violation. So the change would be to begin this sentence by inserting except as otherwise provided in this chapter. And then it would continue as written. So that the one piece that's a misdemeanor is clearly a misdemeanor, that's otherwise provided. And then anything else is a violation. So that, Mr. Mayor, is strictly a clarifying change, not a substantive change.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. And Madam Clerk, do you have that?
I do. No. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else need us to say that one more time so everybody understands it? Okay. Assembly members, you all understand it? Is there any other amendments or changes to this ordinance? Is there any objections to this ordinance moving forward? Mr. Wanamaker.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question for law. Is there anything in the requirements for recording firearms and handling of firearms in this ordinance that is beyond what alcohol, tobacco, and firearms currently requires?
I don't believe so, Mr. Wanamaker. I think that this was done with the view that we could not be any stricter than state law and police federal law.
Madam Manager, if we could get Lieutenant Campbell up here, he can answer that.
Yes, thank you.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Good evening, sir.
If you want to restate your question, so.
My question is there anything in this current version for the handling of firearms that is beyond what is currently required by alcohol, tobacco, and firearms?
Well, to start with, my name is David Campbell. I'm a lieutenant with the Juneau Police Department, and based on my understanding of this statute, there is nothing that goes beyond what the ATF requires that's in the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wanamaker? Then
yes, I have an additional question that probably best answered by Mr. Keel or anybody he designates. It's been mentioned that the holding time for these goods, 30 days, is unreasonable. What can you tell me as someone who has heard all the testimony about that? What is your opinion, and does the committee itself have an opinion about it, or is it just basically your interpretation of the committee's thoughts?
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To answer Mr. Wanamaker's question, As I said a minute ago, I don't think there's anything magical about 30 days. I think it is a reasonable period of time. And I certainly acknowledge that to hold inventory before putting it up for sale, or rather before being allowed to sell it, I suppose you could put that beautiful item on the shelf and say available September 1. But before being allowed to sell it does impose some small carrying cost. I think that there are a couple of important factors that justify that, and you heard me speak to them, a couple of them briefly before. One is the time to discover a theft, and you've certainly heard people speak tonight that you're not going to discover every theft within 30 days. We had a member of the public testify at the Human Resources Committee about a family member, someone, in fact, Mr. Cox also told a story, someone trusted who victimized a family member, and it took a while to discover the theft. This is certainly not perfect, but I think the Human Resources Committee was unwilling or uninterested in extending that 30-day time to try and catch every theft. To get much shorter than that, I would fear would leave too many undiscovered before the property was potentially sold, and you had to try a much more complicated process to recover something stolen. The other thing I didn't speak about earlier, though, is the question of parity. The state law with regard to pawn shops requires them to hold items brought in, and I believe it is every item, not just these categories, but every item, for 30 days before they're allowed to sell it. Now, I acknowledge that a pawn shop is a different model. It is a different business model. But that approach of the 30-day holding period, along with the electronic reporting to JPD, has been, and JPD testified to this, has been very successful in making pawn shops an unattractive outlet for thieves to try and turn stolen goods into cash. And so that's certainly, I won't try and speak for the entire Human Resources Committee, but that has been my reasoning for sticking with the 30-day period originally proposed by the police department.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Crane, you had a question?
Well, the question was regarding the difference between what they're required to do under state law and this. And I don't believe that state law requires them to provide a list to the police within 30 days.
Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With regard to Mr. Wanamaker's question about any requirement for firearms, I think he was asking about the federal government. But it is true, currently, under state law, if a pawn shop has a federal firearms license, and I believe the one here in our community does, they must report electronically to JPD. They must hold for 30 days before they can sell the firearm. The state does not require that of secondhand dealers. It does require the information gathering, but no report to JPD. I don't believe the federal government places any hold period on a firearms dealer. So I don't know, Mr. Wanamaker, if that goes specifically to your question. I think it's very important that we keep in perspective. If I, as a customer, walk into a licensed firearms dealer, I have no waiting period. I have no holding period. The only requirement would be on the business owner. We are not imposing on a buyer any requirement that the federal government does not impose on that same buyer. And I guess I'll look over at the attorney and Lieutenant Campbell to make sure I've got that right.
The way I understand you phrased it, Assemblyman Keel, that I believe you are accurate in that the buyer doesn't have any kind of holding on them. It's strictly towards the owner of the secondhand store. And just to clarify, in meetings I've had at the police department, the 30 days internally was set to mirror the pawn statute. So it wasn't just an arbitrary number that was picked out of the air.
Mr. Keel, did you have a question? I thought everybody's hand went up.
Mr. Mayor, two of our public testifiers tonight asked questions about proving ownership when something is reported. And I thought it might be good for the benefit of the assembly members and the members of the public to hear, I guess, maybe from the city attorney. My understanding is there's nothing in this ordinance that changes the standards you have to meet to prove you own something. If you walk into JPD and say, hey, there's a beautiful gun for sale or a beautiful piece of jewelry for sale and it was stolen from me, but you can't show it was yours, you're out of luck today, and you'd be out of luck if this ordinance passes. But I want to look over to the experts and make sure we're not changing anything from the way it works now in terms of legal standards and how the rules work.
From my perspective, after 19 plus years of law enforcement, ownership of property definitely does become an issue. This is a very broadly written statute, and some of the testimony that was given earlier tonight is accurate where there are problems. But I can also think of numerous occasions where people do have serial numbers, or they do photograph their items, that on the recommendations of their insurance companies, to where people do have the ability to easily identify their valuable items. So by keeping the language the way it is, I think that it serves the broad purpose for the times where we can identify the material that is reported stolen.
Law?
Yeah, and I would like to point out that the secondhand dealer does have rights in this three-way situation as well, and ownership is not determined by this. In other words, if it becomes evidence in a criminal case, that doesn't necessarily, the police do not have the right to return that property to the rightful owner. There could be a civil something between the pawn dealer and the owner. So, in fact, there's a Ninth Circuit case that I was looking at that talks specifically about that. And so it is clear that there's the pawnbrokers have due process rights as well, because they have a contract or a bailment to hold that property to sell it. And so this would not affect that.
Any other questions, comments? Any amendments to this ordinance? Mr. Carlton Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Lieutenant, I confess that I have not attended the Human Resources Committee where a lot of this detail has come out relating to this issue, but I'm curious, from a data standpoint, what kind of data does the department have on the extent of this problem?
There's a computer program called Leads Online that was presented to the Human Resources Committee. Thank you. I wanted to say Human Rights. But to the Human Resources Committee, it was displayed by Lieutenant Sell, and it's a computer system that allows for relatively easy categorization of items that are taken in, to the point where it's fairly automated, to where people can come in and do it through regular interactions downloading, or if you have an item that is on this list and you only take in, you know, one a year, you can go on individually and do it as well. And I believe Lieutenant Sell did a demonstration to the HRC that was that showed how easy the system actually was.
Yep. Mr. Mayor, what I'm looking for is to, how large is this problem? How many cases recovered goods are we choosing, or are we hoping to recover as a result of this ordinance? That's what I'm looking for.
I don't have a number for you, sir, but my based on my experience, I would say it's a massive problem. The issues with pawn shops are not very extensive because of the recording and the reporting mechanisms that they have. We are typically able to, you know, if we recover property, find out who pawned them, go talk to that person. Typically, someone else has convinced them to pawn it, but we're able to backtrack through it. In talking to the property detectives, Craig Campbell was the person that really kind of brought this to our attention. He was a property crimes detective. And what happened is he would get leads that there were some stolen property out there that went to, you know, a secondhand store. And prior to him being able to get to the secondhand store, it had been you know, sent off, disposed of, sold, whatever, or the item was, the record keeping wasn't such to where we could say, oh yes, this absolutely is the item that had been reported stolen. So there was a pretty big gap between, a loophole, I guess you would say, between the secondhand stores and what was going on with the pawn shop. So Investigator Campbell did some research, found a statute that was in other communities. I think it was Anchorage, if I remember correctly. And I know it was another city that had a very similar statute, and he brought this forward. And I think that if this did get adopted, it would close that loophole, and it would be a very valuable tool for the police department to find these items, make cases against suspects, and return items to rightful owners.
Mr. Smith, what I'm looking for is some data. You suggest that you don't really have any data, but you characterize it as a massive problem.
Sure.
To what extent, in a percentage, rough percentage, a percentage of total recovery, what percentage of these items do you think we'd be able to recover as a result of including the secondhand stores?
Yeah, and Mr. Smith, I have to apologize in that I wasn't a part of the earlier discussions with the HRC. Just so happens that the other members that did present were out of town, and I was told today, hey, come represent the police department. So I don't have any hard numbers for you. Only I can say that the property crime issue became big enough to the point where at the police department we have five detectives, and three of them were assigned to property crimes and two of them were assigned to people crimes. So it was a big enough issue to where, you know, 60% of the detectives were working just on property. And we had just case after case after case where had there been either a holding period or better records periods, we thought that we could have made a successful case and we weren't able to, which spurned the request to have this ordinance written. But a number, sir, I apologize, I can't give you.
Mr. Jones.
Just to maybe answer part of Carlton's question, GPD statistics over the last 3 years has been almost 3,000 thefts and close to 400 what they're calling burglaries. I can't imagine they only stole one item. So if that'll give you some idea of the probably the amount of things stolen, not necessarily recovered, but certainly stolen.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Becker, do you have any questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other questions? Wishes of the Assembly? We didn't get a motion, did we? Mr. Nankervis?
I object.
You object to the motion of moving this forward. Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Clerk, will you...
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, Mr. Wanamaker.
Could we... I'd like to hear Mr. Nankervis' reasoning for his objection.
you'd like to hear your reason for objection.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I was with the HRC for these meetings, and I was able to listen to the public testimony, and it's unfortunate there was a few people here tonight that weren't at the HRC meetings. We had several meetings on this. And with my former profession, I can sympathize with what the police department is trying to do, but I'm not willing to sacrifice what I consider to be a pretty closely held right of the people in this community, and any community, actually. And that's in unreasonable searches and seizures. And I believe this steps a little too far along those lines. For one thing, they're not pawnbrokers. But we're giving them a pawnbroker law. We're asking them to hold on to things for 30 days. Where a pawnbroker holds on to it for 30 days, he's getting interest. These people are getting nothing. They're losing money if they hold on to it. And with the exception of one business owner, we didn't get any testimony at HRC in support of this from the businesses. I don't think any, with the exception of one. I don't like the 30-day hold. I don't like all the language regarding the police hold order, because I don't believe that just because a business takes in something secondhand, that the bar ought to be lower for them on what the police can and cannot tell them to do. I believe if you believe it's a stolen item and you believe who has it, you go see the judge and you get a search warrant to go confiscate that item. And I believe that what we're trying to do here is well-intentioned, very well-intentioned. We're trying to get stolen property back. But at what cost? And when I say we lower the bar, which is what I said to Lieutenant Sell when she was here, is that we've lowered the bar on what the police can do and where the threshold is where they have to get a search warrant because of what these businesses do. And I'm not willing to go down that road because of these businesses, simply because these businesses sometimes get some stolen property. Mr. Smith, to my right here, asked a question about percentages. I've got some experience as well. I would say that there's probably well in excess of 90% of the transactions that some of these business members got up here tonight and testified to, well over 90% of those are done with not stolen items. So while there is a massive problem with theft, I guess massive is how you want to look at it, most of these folks in here doing business are good, hardworking people, and they're not trying to do anything wrong. But we're going to ask them to hold things for 30 days to catch the small percentage of things that have come in. And again, I say it's well-intentioned, and I get it. But I'm not willing to lower the bar for these people to try and get that. I think this thing needs a whole lot more work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. We had questions down the line here. Anybody else? Questions? Mr. Wanamaker? Ms. Troy?
Yeah, I don't really have any questions per se, but I too sat in and heard the testimony, and I found it interesting in that many of the business owners were holding up their credibility and saying that would be only on occasion that they would maybe have to question somebody and consider being captured by this ordinance, and then they would flip over and then say it was a very burdensome regulation, and I never got the connecting the dots between how they would be occasionally having to come into compliance and it being a burdensome regulation. And so it felt for me that closing the loophole on behalf of the victims, that it was very minimal burden on the existing burden on the existing secondhand dealers. So I will be voting in support of this ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Troll. Any other comments, questions? Mr. Wanamaker, you still hold your objection?
I didn't object. I was asking a question in order to try to determine how I will vote on this, and I've decided that I am going to very, very reluctantly support this. And I say reluctantly because I believe Mr. Nankervis raises some good points about this going too far. On the other hand, I know some people who have been recently victimized, and I don't know how else to help to try to close the gap. And I don't believe this assembly is willing to take more time to work on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Any other comments? Is there any objections to this moving forward?
I maintain my objection.
Thank you. Mr. Nankervis, please read the roll.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
No.
Two no's, seven yes. Motion carries.
Thank you. We'll move forward to the next item on our public hearing. Madam Clerk, will you please read the title for serial number 2014-24B?
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $9,939 as additional funding for the Juneau International Airport Runway Safety Area Capital Improvement Project. Grant funding provided by the Federal Aviation Administration.
Thank you. Admin report.
The original appropriation 2013-11 AM was less than what the FAA had actually awarded. This increases the FAA Airport Improvement Program grant to match the grant agreement. This phase of the RSA project includes a construction contract with CECON, contract administration costs, and a pass-through payment to FAA for FAA facilities installation. The FAA funds 93.75% of the project, with the remainder being split between the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Juneau International Airport. The Airport Board reviewed this action at its July 9, 2014 meeting and recommended forwarding to the full assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on 2014-24B? Seeing none, assembly action. Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you. I move assembly approval of ordinance 2014-24B and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Is there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, so ordered. Unfinished business, Madam Manager, anything sneak up on us?
No, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move forward to new business, Docks and Harbors Contract Amendment for Professional Services. Madam Manager, anything out of the ordinary there?
No, this is part of the contract and part of the RFP that was put out for the construction of the Aurora Harbor rebuild. PNND was selected to provide the professional services for this project. They proposed a fee for the construction administration and inspection services, and it's based on time and materials to not exceed $630,130. And the contract amendment was reviewed and recommended an approval by the Docks and Harbors Board at its July 31st, 2014 meeting.
Thank you, and I think we can do this by orders of the day.
I have a question first.
Go ahead.
Will this carry us through the entire phase one?
I'll ask the port director to please come forward and answer that question.
Carl, you can tell port director, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Troll?
Yeah, I have a question just for my own edification and understanding. So we contract this out because we don't have the in-house expertise. I'm assuming that's the reason why.
Yes.
In terms of our engineering department, is there in time an ability to acquire this expertise so that we can begin to use these grant funds to support our own engineering staff? Or is it such a unique civil requirement?
Ms. Troll, I guess I'll answer that.
Okay, thank you.
It's the way the assembly does business with these types of contracts. And I would assume the policy call was 10 years ago
at least
or more to put these things out to bid for the local contract and local engineering companies to bid on and move forward with so that we didn't have to have in-house engineers sitting there part-time. This particular one happens to be a long project that could be paid for with somebody in-house, but most of them are shorter-termed projects, mm-hmm. and we didn't want, of course, engineering is there too, didn't want to have people sitting on their...
Right. I get it.
For long periods of time, not doing anything.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for the explanation. Okay.
Mr. Wanamaker.
I move orders of the day.
Is there any objections to orders of the day? Seeing none, we will move forward to...
Mr. Mayor, I apologize. Can I ask the city, can we approve a contract amendment by orders of the day, or do we need a motion? I would be happy to offer the motion.
Madam Law Department. I asked this question this morning, and I said was told that we could do it orders of the day.
I am not entirely sure. When in doubt, I suppose a motion wouldn't hurt. That would be a safe answer.
If you want to do a motion, too, we'll cover it both ways. Mr. Keel, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I move approval.
Thank you. Are there any objections?
Yeah.
Seeing none, so ordered, and... What we'll do is make sure that we clear this up so that we do orders of a day appropriate, if it's appropriate, if we could. So if you'd check into it just a little bit more. Okay, next is a late file senior citizen hardship exemption application from Ms. McKinley, staff.
Yes, on May 8th, Ms. McKinley filed a late application for the 2014 senior citizen real property hardship exemption. The code places the authority for approving a late claim with the Assembly per 6910.020C. Ms. McKinley has consecutively filed late for the past 4 years. The basis for filing late has been primarily due to medical issues. Approval of the late filing would result in loss of $989.83 in revenue to the CBJ. The Assessor's Office has reviewed the application. It's determined that Ms. McKinley has an income ratio to qualify her for the exemption. Had it been filed in a timely manner. I recommend the Assembly authorize the assessor to accept the application as if timely filed and acknowledge the applicant's late filings are repetitive.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Any questions? Ms. Troll.
I would just request that instead of acknowledgement of the applicant's late filings, that perhaps this would be the last time we would so honor a late filing request so that it doesn't continue to become repetitive.
I guess I would just say that there's extenuating circumstances, and maybe we could have staff follow up before it gets to our level somehow. I think Mr. Rob Steele was going to put it in his data bank of his computer for next year during the process.
Okay.
To make sure it doesn't happen again. And we get her incorporated into the process properly. So is there any objections to us appropriating Mr. Nyker?
I object, just like I did last time, based on principle. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Please take the roll.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Ms. Becker? Ms. Becker, did we lose you?
I had it on mute.
Oh, okay.
The answer is yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
8-1, motion carries.
Thank you. We'll move on to item C, application for designation of liquor license premises, suit 907. Madam Manager.
This application is for designation of the liquor license for Suite 907 for certain dates and times to allow the business to hold youth-related events for persons between the ages of 17 and 20. If approved by the Assembly, the event dates and times would be from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. on the nights of August 14th, August 19th, September 25th, October 16th, November 6th, and December 29th. I look to the Human Resources Chair to find out the recommendation made prior to this Assembly meeting.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At the Human Resources Committee meeting immediately before tonight's Assembly meeting, the HRC heard from the applicant and considered this request. We had several questions about the applicant's plan and how the premises would be prepared for these no-alcohol nights, and the committee recommends approving the application for de-designation for the six specific dates listed in the packet there. I can read them off if you need.
No, I don't think we need the dates. Are there any questions from the assembly members? Seeing or hearing none, is there any objections to this de-designation? Doesn't sound right. Of liquor license premises suit 907. Is there any objections to that moving forward? Seeing none and hearing none, Ms. Becker? So ordered. Staff reports, Madam Manager.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Jesse, we also had another motion relative to this.
I was going to mention it at committee reports. Do you
okay.
Know?
Okay. Got it.
Okay. So we will move forward to staff reports. Is there anything, Madam Manager? Thank you. We'll move forward to the mayor's report. And tonight we had, of course, the backing in ceremony at the Douglas Fire Station for their brand new engine, which is a $650,000 fire engine. When I first started back in the 60s at the fire department, the past engine that we received, I saw the bid award, was for $16,000. And that was for a fully equipped fire engine and a 1,000-gallon per minute pumper and a 1,000-gallon tank. Tonight we have a new rig on the line, and it is 1,500-gallon per minute pumper and 750 gallons of water in its tank, fully equipped for $650,000. We'll round it to the next one. So those things are not getting any cheaper, and hopefully they take good care of it and keep it in order. Move forward to other committee reports. Mr. Wanamaker?
The Public Works and Facilities Committee will meet on the 18th in noon here.
Thank you. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met just at 6 o'clock this evening. We heard an annual report from the Aquatic Facilities Advisory Board. You all have copies of that. We also considered appointment to the Juneau Commission on Aging and recommend the appointment of Charles Wilson to a seat reserved for a person over the age of 65 for a term expiring, let's see, June 30 of 2017. You want the rest of them? Okay.
Is there any objections to that? I wasn't paying attention, Mr. Keel. I'm sorry. Move forward, Mr. Keel.
Thank you. We considered appointments to the Human Rights Commission, and the HRC recommends reappointment of Caitlin Teaster and Haifa Siddiqui to terms expiring May 31st of 2017.
Are there any objections to those names moving forward? Seeing and hearing none, so ordered.
And we considered appointments to the Sales Tax Board of Appeals, which I should note didn't have an annual report because in the last year there haven't been any sales tax appeals filed. But we did recommend reappointment of Pat Watt to a term expiring December 31st of 2016.
Is there any objection to that appointment? Is that a good thing that we didn't have any appeals or a bad thing, Mr. Keel? Which way?
Hopefully that means it's a good thing. It means folks are filing and the sales finance office is being both diligent and reasonable, right. God willing. And finally, as Ms. Troll alluded to, in discussing the de-designation of licensed premises for no alcohol nights where minors would be allowed on the premises, the HRC recommended just a sort of a procedural move for the way we handle those. Those have to be approved by the local governing body. That's us. And so the recommendation of the HRC was that they be run through the appropriate city departments. In this case, mostly the police department has to deal with any problems. And they come to the full assembly if there are no objections from staff, the same way a liquor license renewal would come if there are no objections from staff. Those don't come through HRC unless there's a problem. So that was the recommendation of the HRC. I don't know that it needs formal assembly action.
Are there any comments on that action from HRC? Anybody not like that or like that? Comments at all? Seeing none, we'll do it that way. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Anything else from you?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Crane?
The next Finance Committee meeting will be Wednesday, August the 20th.
Thank you. 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, you know, time?
Normal time. 5:30?
5:30. Thank you, Ms. Crane. Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. After a couple of rescheduled meetings, the scheduled dates, the Lands Committee is now scheduled for Monday, August 25th.
26th? 25th. Not paying attention and can't hear. Ms. Troll, do you have anything for us?
On committee reports?
You can go to liaison reports if you wish.
Under liaison report, I was appointed at one time to be the liaison to the Alaska Coastal Forest, the Alaska Coastal Rainforest Center, and I just received a letter today acknowledging that they're not moving, you know, we don't no longer need to acknowledge our prior agreement. We don't need to renew it, primarily because they are now administered by the University of Alaska Southeast. They're incorporated into that process, as well as the university partners of UAF. And they also are in partnership with the Juneau Economic Development Council, so among other partnerships. So we, the assembly, helped kind of launch the whole program. But we're not intimately connected in the day-to-day oversight of the board of directors.
So, Ms. Troll, did we put some of our land into that?
No. We never put any land. I mean, Ms. Crane was the prior liaison. No land, no money. We just helped spur the idea and facilitate the collaboration to bring in the university, to bring in the Institute of Socioeconomic Research, to bring in other Southeast interest, and that's been achieved. So this should be looked at as a milestone of success.
And that's good. I just would like to make sure that we don't lose contact with them and that they can continue to give us updates somehow and
right,
keep us informed.
They're keeping the JEDC informed, and I am receiving their monthly newsletters and updates. And if anything comes across that I need to report to the assembly, I would be so happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Troll. Anything else? Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Liaison reports. Planning Commission tomorrow, Committee of the Whole, 6 p.m. here in Assembly Chambers. 7 p.m. is a regular Planning Commission meetings. For Ms. Commissioner Watson, who is here tonight, I'd just like to let him know the past two meetings that I have missed, it was because the weather blew me off the grounds and I went into the Anchorage where there is no cell service. I apologize for that. And this Wednesday, 6 p.m., airport board meeting at the airport. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones?
Thank you. Local Emergency Planning Committee is meeting on Wednesday. The Downtown Business Association canceled their end of July meeting so they could participate with the other businesses downtown in the cleanup day. And then they rescheduled and canceled that because of no quorum. Docks and Harbors, at the last meeting, we dealt with Aurora Harbor. The Stater Harbor is about 95%, maybe a little bit further along. They expect the bid documents to be ready about September 1st for the Stater Harbor project. Department of Law has been working with Docks and Harbors, and they've been negotiating with Gold Belt on the tram lease. Draft lease has been drafted by law to be negotiated with Gold Belt. That seems to have finally gathered some more momentum and appears to be moving forward. And at their meeting, they elected David Logan as the chair and Tom Donick as the vice chair for the next year. And that's it for Docks and Harbors, and that's it for liaison reports.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Wanamaker, liaison reports.
Thank you. The
I haven't been able to attend the Economic Development Council or the PRAC at their last meeting, so I'm not sure what's current.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I neglected under committee reports while Ms. Becker was out. I temporarily assumed the gavel for the Tax Exemption Review Committee. We had two meetings, July 24 and August 7, and the committee has been reviewing data, hasn't come up with any proposals yet, but the short version of the committee report would be that we've received a lot of data, categories and amounts of tax foregone in various categories of our exemptions, especially the cap on single items or single services, out-of-borough sales, and then some fairly detailed breakdowns on what makes up the roughly $2.8 million that the city doesn't collect from seniors under that exemption, and the roughly $5.5 million we don't collect on food. So I apologize for not including that under committee reports. Under liaison reports, the Affordable Housing Commission is working over the RFP for the Housing Action Plan that the Assembly approved spending money on. They're having a special meeting actually tomorrow at noon here at City Hall to finalize some verbiage changes for that, trying to focus it in and get specific about action items that can be part of that plan for the contractor who eventually wins it. And the school board will have its first meeting of the new school year about to start here tomorrow evening.
All right. Ms. Crane?
Yes, at the last hospital board meeting, they spent a considerable amount of time going through the FY14 financial results. They completed FY14 with a total excess of revenues over $5.1 million. It was $200,000 less than FY13, but $1.7 million better than budget. From an FY14 cash receipts standpoint, the hospital's receipts exceeded disbursements by $7.8 million. Some cash receipts were received in the first half of FY14 and were attributable to a Medicaid repricing issue and also money from the federal government related to transitional outpatient funds. In addition, $898,000 in electronic medical records incentive funds were received in December of 2013, and these funds will be spent beginning in FY15 as part of the Meditech electronic records information system conversion, which will total about $4.6 million over FY15 and 16. The FY14 excess cash receipts will fund the Meditech project and will also help offset the anticipated loss in FY16 of $3.7 million in federal funds related to the rural hospital demonstration program. So they are on track at this point and doing fairly well, but anticipating some deficits to come.
Do we expect some changes in the rural hospital thing?
We're expecting those funds to go away. We've been, as you know, we've talked to our federal representatives and have been lobbying to keep those funds, but at this point, it looks like we may be losing that demonstration project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ouch. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Eagle Crest Board met on August the 7th. Two main items on that agenda were the manager evaluation and the Learning Center construction update. Everything's on schedule there. And the next meeting of the Juneau Convention Visitors Bureau is now scheduled for August 21st.
Thank you. Ms. Troll, anything? Mr. Nankervis, anything? Mr. Jones, anything? Ms. Becker, committee report or liaison reports?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to start out by giving my thanks to the Assembly for your good wishes and good thoughts that came my way during my wonderful stay in Seattle at the hospital. I appreciate it, and I know it helps healing immensely. Thank you to the mayor for leading the COW. I'm assuming that happened. I actually wasn't able to think about it too much on the 18th. The Chamber Board meets this coming Wednesday, and I wanted to just comment on the DIG project cleanup. I have gotten reports since I've been home that that was such a successful event, and people are just totally pumped up about it, and I think there's really kudos should be offered to our staff who also were out there working hand-in-hand on seeing that things happen downtown. Really proud of that effort. And so that's not going to be the last time. This committee is definitely, the DIG committee is definitely in force and want to continue. And just thank you, Jesse, for your report on the tax committee and for working with me today. I appreciated that. And just wanted to let the assembly know that this Thursday will be the next tax exemption meeting. And that's it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Becker, and it's good to have you home here.
Thank you.
We'll move forward with presiding officer reports. What do we have left? Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Landscape Alaska appeal will be heard August 18th before the assembly. All of you should have your relatively large binder of material. Yeah. And just as a reminder, that is going to be before the Committee of the Whole, and so we're starting at 4:30 so that we have time to get completely through that and have a little bit of a break before the Committee of the Whole starts at 6. So that's Monday the 18th at 4:30. It's really enjoyable reading.
All right. We'll move on to any other presiding officer's report. Let's see, what else do we have out there? Bicknell's thing, but that's not.
Still negotiating.
Still under negotiations or whatever.
I think the decision went out in Vic. Comments, I think, are due this Friday from the parties on it.
Okay, so everybody should have got that decision on the Vic case.
Mr. Mayor, on the Bicknell, we've received word from Mr. Corso that they're trying to schedule the hearing. He's waiting to hear back from one of the parties before the schedule's actually reached.
Okay. Okay, so let's move forward with assembly comments and questions, and I just want to bring forward the thanks to Mr. Wanamaker and Mr. Jones for putting together this task force objective for the Treadwell Ice Arena. It was in the front of your book, and it has to do with the Treadwell Ice Arena. It gives the layout of the group as a 7-member board and some background and the purposes of that group to move forward, meetings and records and staff support, and how the task force will operate. If there's any of you have any objections to any of this, let me know right away, because I want to send out a letter to the 7 appropriate people we want to have on this committee, which is consists of 1 member each from the Eagle Crest Ski Area Board, the Ice Rink User Group representation from both the hockey and the figure skating parts of that group, a member of the general public, a member from the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee, a member from the city manager's office, and 1 assembly member. So that will be the task force. And if you have any names or suggestions for the names to fill any of those slots, I welcome you to get them into me. And like I say, this week we'll be sending the letter out to them asking these different groups to join in the effort of figuring out how to do the Treadwell Ice Arena in an appropriate way. Anybody have any thoughts on the objectives of the task force or anything? Thank you very much for Mr. Jones and Mr. Wanamaker for writing that up, drafting it up. Seeing no objections, we'll move forward on the Treadwell Ice Arena Committee. Assembly comments, Mr. Wanamaker?
None tonight, thank you. Oh, I do have that. Take it back. I was speaking with Rocky. I can never remember his last name. He gave me an awfully good idea, and I'm going to go talk to him a little bit more about it. But basically,
he thinks that it would be very nice if this year in October, on the 70th anniversary of the beginning of the liberation of the Philippines, if the city and borough of Juneau and the Filipino community did something to acknowledge and remember this important event. So I'll talk to him a little more about it. Perhaps we can do something. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Mr. Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before it hits the paper, I want to congratulate the Juneau Soccer Club. Had a girls' U-15 team go down to Washington State and play the largest tournament in the West Coast. Not only did they win that tournament outright, they allowed exactly one goal in the entire tournament, which is an incredibly impressive showing. Call them Team Surge, and their coach, John Newell, did a great job, and so I just want to congratulate all of them. The only other comment I have this evening, Mr. Mayor, would be to compliment our police chief on the job he did speaking to the chamber this past week. I think it is an excellent thing for our police chief to get out and talk to community groups. I hope he talks to more community groups. I think he has a pretty good approach to community outreach and to keeping the community informed about what JPD's up to and hearing from them about what they think JPD ought to be up to. So my thanks to him for that effort. That's it for me, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Frey.
Nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
No comment, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have two items. One, I've been in receipt of several comments from people that live near the airport regarding the excessive noise from the helicopters, and that it has been growing in intensity and frequency, and seeing how the airport master plan is now going under an update, it seems that that would be the appropriate place to try and address this concern. And I would just ask that Mr. Nat Curvis, our liaison to the airport board, kind of talk that up and see if they can't incorporate the neighborhood concerns as they go through their airport update. They might need to tap on the expertise of our community development director, but it is a growing problem, and I would like to see it addressed through an update planning process before it exasperates even more so.
And just for your information, Ms. Troll, the master plan incorporates a whole big chapter of noise at your airport, so that will definitely be in there already. And the information that we got this morning from Mr. Deering has been forwarded to the airport manager, and so they know about it that way, and we'll be looking at it within hopefully the context of that master plan is a good place to start the look at.
Yeah, that. I think so.
Mr. Nankervis, you had something?
You answered the question I was going to ask. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And the other comment I just wanted to share is, like many of you, I had the opportunity to meet with the Downtown Improvement Group and look at the video and be part of that discussion. And while it is a little disconcerting in terms of what the video reveals about the downtown, on the flip side, the discussion and the community outreach to try and change the image of the downtown is very encouraging. And I understand from talking to you, Mr. Mayor, that as they move further into their process and they actually have some recommendations, that we'll actually have some sessions dedicated to their suggestions. And I just want to applaud the community at large for taking this on, because it's not just a matter of the downtown. It's our community. It's represented there. And I really appreciate the initiative shown by the business community as well as civic people on the street. And thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Troll. Ms. Becker, are you still with us? Mary, are you still with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. Sure.
I lost connection, and then you all went very quiet. So I think we're back now. I don't know why I keep getting ringing coming in, so I don't know.
Well, let's go to you next and let you give your assembly comments and questions if you wish.
Thank you. I don't have any. Thank you.
She said she didn't have any.
Yeah.
Right.
Mr. Nankervis, go ahead.
Nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Jones?
Thank you. One further comment on the downtown improvement group. I've attended the last two Friday meetings. And this Friday, they talked mostly about smoking ordinance and the impact. One piece of information that was sort of interesting was that NCADD, their smoking cessation person who came and talked to us about e-cigarettes, and several of the staff people work with the Glory Hole staff, and about 5 days after the downtown cleanup, they went out and specifically looked at how they might follow up on that. And they reported that they collected in about 2 hours almost more than a third of a 5 gallon bucket of just cigarette butts 5 days after the cleanup. So, and there's a lot of talk about whether that was tourists, locals, crew members, whoever, but they figured that was a considerable number of cigarette butts to collect 5 days after a general cleanup. Also, many of us attended the assisted living needs assessment. I heard some both good things and bad things about that. People sort of critical about they didn't feel they got enough information about why they were there. And other people thought it was very well done and worth the 3 hours of effort. And then also, Karen Crane and I will be at in Nome at Alaska Municipal League meeting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Anything else? Assembly comments or questions? Seeing none, we'll move forward to public participation on non-agenda items. Does anybody from the public wish to give us comments on anything not on the agenda? Seeing none, public participation is closed. Mr. Keel, we need to move into executive session.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly recess into executive session to discuss a matter the immediate knowledge of which could have a detrimental effect on the finances of the City and Borough of Juneau, specifically the ASRC McGraw litigation and settlement negotiations.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Is there any objections to that? Is there any objections from the public of us going into executive session? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you, everybody.
Mary, we're going to hang up and we will call you back.
The Juno Assembly is in executive session right now. We'll be rejoining them when they return.
Keel. We'll be back in regular session. What we did, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. During executive session, we heard a report from staff with recommendations, and the Assembly gave direction from staff to follow up on those recommendations.
Thank you. Any objections to any of that? Anything else for us? We are adjourned.
Thank you.
What color is that fire?
Night, Jeremy.